Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urisin.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My guest today is a private label guru. He's a law school graduate turned entrepreneur and founder of Slicer Brands. So everybody meet my guest, Shaf Qureshi. Welcome to the show, Shaf.
Thanks so much, Nick, for having me, and happy Prime Day.
Oh, yes. Well, as we're recording this, we are about to start the Prime Day activity, I guess I should say.
It's basically the Black Friday of online, I guess you could say.
And, well, you know, this is the thing about Amazon. These guys brought Christmas in the middle of summer, right? That's what they did. That's what Prime Day is, if you think about it.
100%. I mean, a lot of brands are expecting to do 3x, 4x, you know, of their daily run rates. And, you know, I was just creeping on Amazon before, about a day ago, looking at all the deals, all the Prime exclusive stuff. And you wouldn't believe, Nick, like 60% off items that were like $200. You know, even subscribe and save options were like, instead of, you know, 5-10% off, I saw some stuff for 20% off. So that's why people go on and they buy stuff, because, hey, today is Christmas in July.
Well, I mean, that's what they did, because usually in the summer, shopping slows down, right? Because people are traveling, they're going on their summer vacations. So what does Amazon do? They say, okay, we're going to do something to change this. So, and then they bring Christmas in July.
100%. Yeah. Even my own business, you know, although we say that we're evergreen, you know, every business has their seasonalities, right? December is usually the best, but I think this is a great way that our wonderful Jeffrey Bezos put together and said, hey, anyone lagging in sales, you know what? Let's collect something in July. So here it is now. You know,
the funny thing is, as you know, during the pandemic, there was no such thing. So they couldn't have Prime Day during the pandemic. So what happens is, you know, as if like when Christmas is an official holiday, right? So July 4th is an official holiday. There is never a situation where there is no Christmas or there is no July 4th or there's no Thanksgiving. That never happens because they're official. But Prime Day is man-made, for God's sake. I mean, they're all man-made, but it, you know what I mean. So what happens? During the pandemic year, the usual time in July, they couldn't have Prime Day. Oh, no. What are we going to do? When are we going to have the Prime Day? So they did it in October.
Yeah, they did do that. I remember they did do that. And I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of years from now, we see them say, hey, federal holiday, everyone take off July 12th and July 13th for Prime Day.
Yeah, I have no doubt. So when you and I first connected and then we were having our discussion, so you mentioned a formula to me, that a very unusual formula you figured out for your success. So tell us what that formula is.
Okay. Now, I hope our followers really get value from this. So basically, the formula is going to be, let's lose money to make money. Okay.
Lose money to make money. So, I mean, is that the same way of saying, yeah, you need to spend money to make money, or this is a different version of it?
I guess it's kind of synonymous to that. But let me kind of explain what I mean. So basically what I'm saying is, you go to the grocery store, right? And you're looking for ketchup, and you go down the ketchup aisle and you see, okay, directly in front of you, right? There's, for example, a very popular brand, right? Let's go with Heinz, right? Heinz pays a specific premium to be on that part of the shelf, right? Now, Heinz might be breaking even from that purchase, right? Because, you know, they spent the promotional however much the grocery store charged them for that. And although they might lose money on that specific sale, a customer like me will go back to the store. And even if Heinz has a placement on the shelf that is way lower and not directly in my eye, right, in my purview, I'm still going to buy it. So what's end up happening is that although they lost money on that sale, their lifetime value, their LTA increases over time. Because now, guess what? I used the ketchup when I went home. I liked it, right? And now I'm going to go back and look for the same brand, right? So you lose money to acquire a customer, but in reality, you're gaining value because guess what? If you sell a genuinely good product, the customers will come back. And I like to use the same strategy on Amazon.
So how does that translate to Amazon?
Yeah, that's definitely a good question. So basically, what I would do is that I would increase my cost per clicks, right, under sponsored brands or sponsored display ads. And by increasing my bids, I try to beat out the competitors for a short tail, high volume keyword, right? And so when a customer purchases my product, although I'm paying excess of what a normal bidding would be, I'm trying to regenerate another sale from that customer, right? I'm trying to build my LTV off that customer. So although my A cost may be 50%, 60%, you know, and my margins are 40, losing 10%, 20% on that specific product, now if I sell a replenishable or even a, you know, regular commodity, that customer, next time they need the product or, you know, word of mouth, they tell someone else that needs that product, they're going to come back. And on top of that, if my product sits in their house, right, my product has real estate on their shelves or on their table or wherever it's sitting, right? And so my branding is even stronger because now it's sitting in their house. They might come back. They might purchase it again. And so this is kind of the mentality that I have. But, you know, kind of like you also need to make sure that you have a very good product, you know? So a lot of product focus as well, that you're selling something good where customers will come back and not only where depending on the marketing. I hope that kind of makes sense.
So, okay. So let's unpack this. You have a good product. So let's say that's a given. You have reviews or everything else, whatever, and it's a good product. And then you went and bid on keyword that has high volume. Because usually you target smaller volume keywords, but many of them, right? Because it's much easier to stand out. So in your case, you focus on shorter keywords with a lot of volume, and then you increase your bid. When you increase your bid, you show up right at the top. So you increase your visibility. When you increase your bid, you increase your visibility.
Exactly.
And people buy it, and it costs you $1 for a $2 sale.
Exactly.
So the customer bought it. So the next customer, same deal. So you keep making sales. You're bleeding. So how long does this last?
Well, listen to this. So you go one season, right, where you kind of use that strategy. But keep in mind, for example, if you have SNS on your Amazon listings or otherwise you don't even use SNS, the following year, right, those customers, they're coming back to buy from you when they're organically searching that specific product, you know? So for example, the first year they might be typing in, you know, a short tail keyword like garlic press, right, which is high volume, right? And they see that, okay, you know, your sponsored ad is all the way at the top, okay? And you're paying, for example, $6 a click, right? And your margins are $4, right? So you acquire the customer, you lost $2, right? Guess what? Next summer, their garlic press, they need another one. Now this time, they remember your brand name, right? Next time they come back, now they're searching up your brand name and they're buying it organically, which is awesome. And so this allows you to get the organic profit, right? As well as it affects your bestseller ranking. And keeping in mind, if you go on H10 and you look up the keyword tracker and keyword search volume, you'll see that your brand is also going to increase in the search volume for your specific, you know, product and as well as the brand. So that's another great way to brand and get customers back.
Okay. So you just highlighted the real value. So I think, you know, you are a lawyer turned entrepreneur, but I think you're still talking lawyer language, because you're not doing justice to yourself. The real value is not because, at least to me, the way it looks is you paid a dollar to generate a $2 sale. Fine. You do so many of those in a short period of time. So you're going to get orders, right? That's a given. That's why you're doing this. You're going to get orders. When you get orders, the real value of that effort is not because your product, you know, now you're smiling, you know where I'm going with it. So it's the real value is not your product sitting on their table or on the shelf at home so that next year they're going to know. The real value is as those orders come in, your order flow rate has gone up, and that's going to push your bestseller rank up, and therefore you are going to improve your ranking in the Amazon ecosystem. So that way, other people coming in, searching that product, you're going to get their orders without even advertising. So in the short term, but you can't do this like slow drip, drip, drip. You have to do this like concentrated, like a, you know, push the whole campaign in a short period of time to generate the maximum number of orders for a specific set of keywords. And then you start dominating those keywords and you get organic traffic. So tell me if that's right.
So you listen, you got it perfect. That's exactly it. But let me tell you something. It's a universal idea that we take a bunch of low volume keywords, right? And we bid for them, right? And guess what? The low volume keywords, you know, the bidding's going to be low. And because the bidding's low, we have more money to spend. And guess what? We're going to be ranking for way more keywords, right? What I think is happening these days in 2020, July, is that I've tested and we've strategized that what ends up happening if you use a lot of long tail keywords and you bid for those keywords is that your click-through rate might not be that well for a lot of long tail keywords. And so if your click-through rate is not good for a lot of long tail keywords, then what ends up happening is that it takes your BSR and it shocks it. And so what's happening is that your BSR is increasing, right? And so after testing, we've understood that if we take a couple of short tail keywords, right, like 3 to 5 short tail keywords with very high volume, and we increase our bids for those, right, and they have good CTR rates, right, what ends up happening is that your BSR actually goes down. And the reason why it goes down is because that keyword is a very good match for that product that you're selling. Although it's high volume, and although, you know, the cost per click is super high, your click-through rate is actually has really good advantage. And because, like I said before, in turn, your BSR goes down. And so what ends up happening is that although you paid a high cost per click to get those orders, because your BSR is going down, well, guess what? For example, you spent $1,000 on PPC for one specific keyword, you might be generating another $2,000 a day for that product, because the BSR is going down because your click-through rate is at such a phenomenal, you know, place. And so I totally agree. The long tail keyword strategy was good, but I think that strategizing the short tail keyword strategy, right, where you have a bunch of those and you just increase your CPCs, that is something that, you know, has been successful for us. So,
yeah. So I think there are two things that we're talking about here in the end, when you really break it up into pieces. One is increase the bid for the purposes of getting more click through, more people clicking through your listing. Short tail or long tail, doesn't matter. So don't worry about what you are saying is, don't worry about the cost of those high bid clicks.
Exactly.
Stay focused on what kind of an impact it's going to make on your BSR, BSR being bestseller rank. So there's one other thing that you mentioned, best clarify. When BSR goes down, that's a good thing, right?
Of course.
It's like
a lovely thing.
Number one is the lowest number. So you want your BSR to go down. So you are basically banking on the fact that I want to pay whatever it costs to increase my exposure so that I get many, many, many orders. And as I get many, many orders, my order flow rate is going to go through the roof. And that ultimately will get your BSR better. And when your BSR is better, your exposure is much better. And therefore, you're getting organic orders. So that's one concept we're talking about. Yeah. The other concept is, don't worry about looking at long tail keywords because the cost is low.
100%.
Go after the short, you know, short tail keywords. Don't worry about the volume. Just bid on it because those keywords convert or click through at a higher rate. Right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yep. And so what ends up happening is that a lot of players in the market, they don't strategize this method because they're afraid that, oh, we're spending X amount of dollars on PPC. You know, we're spending, you know, our budgets are, you know, $400, $500, and they used to be $100. And, you know, as we see Amazon grow and become this, you know, giant behemoth that controls almost, I think it's what, 43% of all online retail sales are done on Amazon. As it grows, you know, Amazon's understood that, okay, we've even achieved being third highest ad spend, you know, company, basically, I think in the world it is right after Google and YouTube. And so they've even given us a lot of metrics for specifically marketing just this year, Nick. We've started to see metrics on very accurate impression shares. They've launched many tools under brand analytics. And so this kind of shows us that they're becoming a little bit more, I would say, synthetic on making the advertising space stronger. And so, and by the way, I don't want to, you know, drive the idea that advertising is the only thing that's important, but, you know, product development is also a very important part. And that's obviously the most important, if not say, because if you have a good product, you're not going to have good marketing, right? And so if you can strategize both of these things and deep dive focus in 2022 on marketing, you can successfully sell. Because like I said, you know, I started selling in 2019, right? I launched two products at the end of 2019 around October. And the reason why I was able to scale up to the seven-figure level was because I did a lot of product testing, right? Worked with a ton of factories, understood kind of like, okay, you know, if X factory is offering, for example, painter's tape, if X factory is offering this type of tensile strength, can I get a different type of tensile strength from B factory, you know? So making sure that my products are good, working with a few suppliers, and then ordering or sourcing for that matter from that specific supplier, and then pushing the marketing after believing that, okay, this product will be able to compete with my sellers. This product will be able to kind of be the category leader, right? And so, you know, I don't want you to think that, you know, the major, major proponent here is going to be the marketing. You got to battle with it, this and that, blah, blah, blah. Product, you know, research and identifying what the market needs and also what the market is missing is going to be the most important thing.
Yeah, and there is no end to it because you are in the universe of keywords. So I always say this, Amazon is not a marketplace of products. It's a marketplace of keywords, and there is no end to it.
100%.
So you can always find a niche and then create a product for that niche. You just need to know how to look at numbers and how to figure out, you know, what are the trends and what is the competition doing. And then once you identify that niche, then you can easily put a product there. And then the next thing is, you know, that's how you're going to market. Focus on those keywords.
Yeah. So that's a very good point you bring up because I have this one test that I call the two up. And the way that the test works, Nick, is that you go on Amazon, right? You find a category, okay, that you think that, okay, there's a couple of private label sellers that are getting sales. There's, you know, one or two big brands, but the split, the volume split of products is not that much. So you're able to generate sales, right? So what you do in the two up test is that you identify the products, you know, take four or five products. And then out of those products, they're going to be very similar, right? You want to identify two features, which is the two up, that you know that, okay, if I add one of these two features, or even both of them is going to be even better, that you'll be able to get the market cap that, you know, you should be getting, right? And now the follow-up question on that is, okay, Shaf, how do you know what the two up is? What do you know as, you know, the two best features you should get, right? So what you should do is, now this is going to require a lot of like manual labor. So what you should do is go into your competitors' products and go to their 1-star reviews, 2-star reviews, and even 4 or 5-star reviews. I would go through all of them, but start with 1 or 2-star reviews and just understand what the customers want. You know, if they're complaining that, oh, I wish this was in black. I wish this, you know, had a handle here. I wish that the handle was a little bit more towards the left, right? You want to see a pattern of a feature that's missing between a couple of bad reviews. You know, you don't want to just take one bad review and say, okay, I need to add this feature because this one specific person in Wyoming said that, you know, this product's missing. You want to get a bunch of those, you know, kind of like pattern of, you know, 1-star reviews that say that, okay, this feature is missing, and apply that towards your new product and see whether your manufacturer is going to be able to do it. But you want to be able to do it where you can really be able to capitalize on it by having, like, I guess, like making that feature really strong, you know? And what I mean by that is when the manufacturer builds it, and also when you present it in your photos, make sure that the customers can see that really well. And I know you agree with me. So what do you think about that?
No, I mean, look, I'm also smiling as you talk about it, because I do that all the time, in the sense that when I say all the time, I don't want to like make it something, it's no big deal. This is a big deal. So what I do is, as I'm sure that you know, there's a tool called Helium 10, right? So in Helium 10, you can go and use your browser extension on a particular product, pick the best seller, and then you can go to your Helium 10 browser extension and download the reviews. You can select for a time range, 4-star, 5-star, 3-star, 2-star, 1-star. So what I typically do is I pick the best seller, and then I download all the reviews, but 2 sets. One is 3 stars and up, and the other is 1 and 2 stars. Whatever is in the high-rated reviews, there is a tab called Review Analysis.
Yes, sir.
That gives you a list of the keywords across all those reviews. So there may be 10,000 reviews, right? And that's not uncommon. Out of 10,000 reviews, your report is going to say zipper brakes 53 times, okay? And let's say you're selling a pillowcase. And if you see zipper brakes 53 times, you know what I do? I tell my client, put a picture, one of the alternative pictures, and then make up a seal, no broken zippers.
Exactly, yep. That's one way to do it.
That's called subliminal message. So that's what you were talking about. So that's what I do. But you've taken it to a whole different level. You've taken it to the level where you are actually creating the product with the kind of terms that are used as a need that people are complaining about.
Yeah, so that's a great point. I use that tool a lot, the Helium 10 one you're talking about, the extension, and I really do enjoy using that one. But let's caveat off that, and let me explain how I take advantage of that even further. So before, you didn't need to be brand registered to run, you know, sponsored brand ads or whatever. But I mean, actually vice versa. Before, you needed to be brand registered, now you don't. But that 1-up or 2-up feature that I'm talking about, to kind of promote it even further and get something that I called an eyeball test, try to get as many as eyeballs on that specific feature as possible, I've run ads for sponsored video ads, right? And what they do is that I'll get some sort of influencer, right? Or I'll get some content creator. And what I'll do is I'll have them make a video for that specific feature, and I'll run sponsored video ads. So I get the word out that, hey, my customers are not offering this. I mean, my competitors are not offering this, but hey, guess what? We can offer this feature, right? And so when customers are scrolling on that short tail, high volume keyword, and, you know, they see my specific ad, my video ad, I'm getting impressions that, hey, I know that all these other products don't have this specific color or feature, but wow, look at this seller. He has that feature, right? And guess what? Let me go on that listing. And you just gained another, you know, another customer, because now you have another feature that, you know, you're offering, and awesome, another additional sale, right?
Well, this brings me to my favorite point. The two magic bullets that I talk about for success on Amazon, two magic bullets. First one is click-through rate. Click-through rate is how do you get more and more people to click on your listing? And that may be because of the ad, it may be your organic appearance, you know, whatever. If you can increase the number of people clicking on that listing, you are basically increasing the audience that you will bring to your individual product page. So you figure that out, that's going to be your chances of increasing your sales will be much higher. Now, of course, there are analytics that will help you do that. You mentioned the brand analytics. So the second magic bullet, I'll leave that to you. What is the second magic bullet?
Second magic bullet, impressions?
It follows from the click-through rate.
Oh, your unit session percentage, conversion rate?
Conversion rate.
There you go.
Conversion rate is everything. That means that you brought the people to the page, and now it's a matter of getting more of them to buy it, right? So, and that's the conversion rate, or unit, they call it unit session percentage. So that's another analytic. So all these are conceptually the things that will give you success, but each and every one of them has a metric associated with it for you to track on. So tell us how you make use of these things yourself.
Yeah, sure. So before I get right into conversion rate, like, I just want to mention a small thing that I was testing with impressions, right? Mm-hmm. So with impressions, as we talked about before, was where, okay, we have video ads that we're running, right? And I like video ads running for a lot of long tail keywords. And the reason why I like video ads running for a lot of specific keywords is because clicks cost money, but impressions are free. And getting the exposure from impressions of a video ad is an awesome way to brand on Amazon. So if customers go on, even though they don't want to buy it, it's okay. They can still see the video. They can watch, you know, the couple of seconds that I have to offer, right? And so that's another way that I get the brand to have more favorability in front of my customers, or even customers that I don't have yet, by just running as many as impressions as I can on all my video ads. So that's just one little tip that I had.
Well, that's very valuable, because you're not paying for it. Why not use it? And of course, use it as broadly as possible.
Exactly. Yeah. Because keep in mind, clicks cost money. Impressions will always be free, Nick, right? Okay. So kind of going back to the thing that you said about conversion rates.
Yeah.
So now conversion rates are very important for your BSR, right? You know that. Okay. Yeah. And the reason why it's important is because it just kind of tells Amazon that, hey, this product is a really good product, or otherwise your PDP, your product display page, is really good, right? Now, to get good conversion rates, your PDP must be amazing. And how to make it amazing? The first best thing is going to be your images. Have awesome images, right? Images that explain what the product is, kind of a video that shows the product itself, right? Whether you use a model or whatever you want to use. And having really good images and a really, really good video obviously prevent returns, because if a customer sees that, okay, this is what it looks like, this is how the product, you know, when you hold it, looks like this, they're going to be less likely to return it because they know what they're buying, right? Another way is having good bullet points. A lot of customers don't read bullet points. I might be a little bit, I guess, ignorant here, because I don't really read bullet points. I don't know if you do, Nick. Do you?
Well, bullet points are, so you're right about images. So basically, when somebody lands on the page, they're looking at the pictures first. And by the way, one little disclosure here, your title has no real value once they are on the page. Because they read the title, they looked at your main image, they clicked on it, they're not going to read the title anymore. So title doesn't matter once they are on the page. Once they are on the page, pictures first. That's, I would say, 60% of the deal. 30% of the deal is the bullets, except bullets are the closers. That's like, imagine you sitting in front of the, you are in a store, salesman, and somebody walked in, they saw something in the window, that's clicking through, right? They saw something in the window and said, oh, I like that. They walked in. So now the first thing they're going to do is they're going to go to the shelf, grab the product and start, you know, touching it, feeling it, smelling it, whatever, right? So that's your product pictures. Now they have a pretty good idea. They want this.
100%. But
they are not yet sure. Now at that point, they turn to the salesman and say, does it do this? And the salesman says, no, it doesn't, but it does this. Oh, but it also does this. Oh, then I'm definitely buying it. And then they buy. Those are the bullets. It's the closers. And the fundamental point about bullets is they are not features and benefits. They have to make emotional connection.
Yeah. So another thing that I guess like we kind of almost forget is how important the EBC is, on how important
that's the 10%. That's the 10%. So you know, I said 60-30 and then the 10%.
Yeah. I thought you said 40 for a second. I'm like,
60% pictures, 30% bullets, 10% everything else. Everything else being obviously your EBC. Now they call it A+. But it's that page that you can design custom. And then that's where you establish the brand and the product and everything else. So,
well, let me ask you a question, Nick. What do you so hold on. So you think that the bullet points are more important than the EBC?
Yes. You know why?
Why?
It's above the fold.
Ah, okay. That's interesting because I don't have a direct statistic on the value of the bullet points, but I do know that if you have good A+ content or EBC, your unit session percentage conversion rate goes up by between 2-3% if you have good EBC.
Okay, so I don't have numbers to give you. This is the reason why bullets. However, what I can tell you is this. Statistically speaking, people don't like scroll.
Good point.
So anything above the fold is likely to get more exposure.
100%.
So therefore, anything above the fold is more likely to play a role in conversion. So therefore, anything above the fold is going to be more valuable than anything below the fold. However, I totally agree that your A+ pages are very valuable. But as you know, Amazon does not index the A+ pages, but Google does. So because you have A+ pages, you may be bringing more external traffic and therefore pushing up the number of orders and the number of conversion that way. I don't know. I could not tell you.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's definitely valuable for external traffic. I actually didn't even know that Google indexes EBC as opposed to Amazon. So that's actually a very good point. I really had no idea. Now it looks like now I need to go back to my EBC and what I have locked on there to make sure we're good.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon does not index the A+ pages. Google does. Wow. There is one other thing. The images that you use in the A+ content, they are alt tags. You need to stuff your keywords in the alt tags because they get indexed.
Yes. Okay. So that I'm familiar with. I've done that trick before, and that's a damn good one because before I wasn't doing that. Until I think like 2 years ago, one of my friends, he's an 8-figure seller. And he's like, hey, you know, I got to do meta tags. I got to, you know, stuff my text. And I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? And so we sat down for like 2 hours and he explained to me how, you know, all that stuff is indexed, which is pretty awesome. But let's talk about another feature that I've been using like crazy. And when I mean crazy, I almost use this feature about every day, and it's on Amazon. So a lot of people kind of ignore the tools that we have under the brand analytics because, you know, a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, it was like, okay, like a lot of softwares were doing what Amazon should have been doing. And so split testing images, split testing titles. I mean, let me tell you a story. When I was, okay, so there's one time, like I think like 3 months ago, I was running my PPC and I saw that, okay, like for this one keyword, I had really good, you know, click-through rates. It was converting well. My impressions were awesome. My ACoS was super low. And so I decided that, hey, let me put this keyword like in my title and see if I can generate more sales, right? But I said, hey, you know what? I'm not going to be able to quantify the sales that I'm getting. So you know what? Let me use the manage experiments tab on under the brand analytics, right? So I went on there and I added the word, right? And I was split testing A and B. So the old title versus the new title. And I'm like, dude, this is working really well. So then I took all my SKUs and I just started wildly split testing the titles, split testing the images. And it's amazing because you can run a test for like 6 weeks, 10 weeks, and Amazon will tell you, okay, this keyword or this image is 97% more likely to generate sales, or it's, you know, 63% probability to generate more sales. And if it stinks, it'll tell you, okay, 20% more likely, whatever. And after you are done testing that, you can test a different image, different title. And as you go up, you know, the Rolodex of experiments that you want to use, you'll start to see that your BSR is slowly dropping, you know? And it's because the ad is now being seen in front of the right keywords and the right images, right? And so it's almost like a circle effect, you know? It's getting better and better and better and better and better on the back end, on the SEO side of it.
So this is under brand analytics.
Yes, manage experiments.
Manage experiments.
Yes, and I highly say that everyone should use it. It's a great, excellent tool, and it's very effective.
Well, there is also something else that I recommend. So we talked about images being so important, and the most important image is the main product image because it plays two roles. It's one is for your click-through in the search results. The other is when they land on the product page, that's the first image that they are looking at. So that's the first impression you're making. What image to use is a big decision. So there's this website called PicFU. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, I use PicFU all the time, yeah.
So it sounds a little bit funny, but it stands for Picked For You, right? So it's supposed to. So that's a great site because you can really create your own audience for polling. And you can say, I want women between the ages of 25 and 35 that make so much money and blah, blah, all those things. And then you can say, I want so many people. And then suddenly you got your audience. And then you put up two pictures and say, which picture would you click the most?
Yeah, yeah. I've used that many times. I think it's so effective. There's also another website that I use. I haven't used it yet, but I have friends that use it. And it's cheaper, way cheaper than PicFu. The volume of people on it is obviously lower than PicFu because PicFu just has, it's like one of the first ones, biggest ones in the game. And so they have a lot of people, but a bit expensive. But let me tell you something, for all my launches, any new product that I'm working on, even thinking about developing, I always run a PicFu test. I look at brand analytics. I understand what Amazon is telling me about my specific customers, right? Whether it's their gender, it's their age, it's their, you know, education. I take those metrics and I put those identical metrics into PicFu. And then, so I have a better idea about who the customers are because I don't want to run a test on, you know, random people, right? That way I'm able to get way better results because those are my customers.
Exactly. You're creating a collection of your customers and then you're asking them, which one would you buy? It's a no-brainer. So tell me, how do you track the conversion rate? What report do you use and how do you make use of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if you go under business reports, right, you can check by SKU level your USP percentages, right, which is basically a conversion rate. I don't know when Amazon's going to start using conversion rates, which I think they already have. They're testing it under some people's brand analytics because one of my accounts, it has it. Another account doesn't have it, which is kind of strange. So basically, if I make a change on a Monday, right, I wait at least 2.5 weeks until I'm running the experiment, right? And then what I do is I'll go back in after 2.5 weeks and I will go back to business reports, type in the date of the 2.5 week increment, and I'll manually compare what the results were. But what's been kind of like a way easier way is using the managed experiments, you know, the managed experiments. If it's not titles or images, I'll use the manual way. If it is title, images, and, you know, other SEO stuff, then I'll use the manage experiments under the brand analytics.
Yeah. So this is what I tell my clients. Okay. All of them. When you're driving a car, you're looking at your dashboard, right? So you can't say, look at your speed. Look at it 50 miles an hour. And then that's it. Don't look at it again for 2 hours. Doesn't work like that, right? Look at your gas. You look at it. And then don't look at it again for an hour and a half. It doesn't work like that. Your eyes need to be on it all the time. So therefore, I tell people, your entire catalog, what is your composite conversion rate? Your top selling items, what is their composite conversion rate and at SKU level? And then the rest, in perspective, over time, associated with the events that affected those fluctuations. You've got to understand that data, but in order to understand it, first you have to have it. And it's not available unless you do what you described. You go to business reports, put in the start date, put in the end date, download it, and then what? It's a bunch of rows. You open it as a CSV file, and then you have to make sense of it, you have to, in perspective, and do some intelligent stuff, you have to process it in Excel or whatever. So what happens is, in my earlier years, I built these elaborative Excel files with all kinds of visualizations, but the data had to be gathered. I would be exhausted by the time I put the data in. I just didn't have the time to or the energy to look at it. And that's exactly what these business reports are. Unfortunately, that's what you need to do in order to be successful.
Right. I mean, you're totally right. It's super time consuming. But if you want to run through my process, which I can totally share, what I do is make an Excel sheet, right? And as you're saying, I check my conversion rates every week. Every week, I just want to see what's fluctuating, what's not fluctuating. If I remember I made any changes, if I'm testing anything specific, I just want to know. Even if I'm not testing it on a specific product, I just want to see, you know, any metrics dramatic or like materially change, right? So what I'll do is that I'll go into Excel. And for example, I started testing 2 years ago. So in the 2 year past, there's 52 weeks. Every week, on a SKU level, I'll have the impression numbers, the CTR numbers, the USPs, the total orders, sales, order numbers, etc. And every week, every SKU I'll add, you know, underneath, you know, week one, underneath that week two, okay, these are the changes, you know? And I know it gets confusing on Excel where everything is kind of white, the same color. So I'll change the colors, gray and yellow, gray and yellow, gray and yellow. So I can see line by line.
You spent the time, you built it, and you know it's. But not everybody is like you, so that's the challenge.
It's a challenge, yeah. It's a challenge, but let me tell you, it's so useful because really get an idea of what your business is doing, how your products are compared to your competitors. Because you can use softwares like Stackline that will tell you conversion rates of your competitors. Exactly. And you can also get conversion rates of your competitors under brand analytics, which is pretty awesome. That's another manual way to do it.
That's click-through rate.
Yeah, you can also get click-through rates as well, but you can also get conversion rates as well on brand analytics.
What they purchase?
Yeah, for product conversion rates, you can get them under brand analytics as well.
For each keyword per ASIN?
Yes.
I've seen that. You have the click-through rate and for these different keywords. But, you know, I studied that report. It doesn't show you everything because it's impossible to show everything. So you plug in the ASIN and you plug in the date, says no data found.
That happens all the time, actually. And I think it has to do with not having a volume of sales for your own product where it can be able to collect the data that it needs to compare to your, for example, if you're doing 1,000 units of something a month, right? And I mean, if your competitor is doing 1,000 sales of something a month, right? And you're doing 50 sales a month, Amazon's not going to pick up 50 sales because for them, that's like, you know, that's like a piece of sand, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why, you know, I've seen that in my own experience.
Yeah. So anyway, my favorite is tracking the conversion rate. I also track buy box retention rate, how long you've been in the buy box, because as you know, Amazon sometimes will show up as another seller on your listing as Amazon Warehouse. And then the next thing is you're no longer in the buy box and sales drop. So that also.
Yeah, that's a good point. I used to use that in wholesale. I also had a wholesale business 2 years ago, and we were tracking the buy box. And that's when I learned about a tool called Keepa. You're probably familiar with it.
Yes.
Keepa has been my best friend ever since. I use that tool the most, I would say.
Yeah. So that's great. So let's talk a little bit about you. So, you know, tell me about the interest in Amazon being a law school graduate.
Very random story. So I did my undergraduate in political science and sociology. Actually, I wanted to be a doctor, so I did microbiology. And my fourth year, I changed it to political science. Then I went to law school and, you know, I did corporate compliance, graduated. But during law school, I decided, I want to start a business. What is, you know, the least frictional way where I can start a business? And Amazon at that time was bumping, right? Like, if you knew the business, you knew that people were making money. And so, but I was never a data-oriented person. You know, the only like numbers-oriented class I ever took in my undergraduate and law school career was pre-calculus, right? Which was when I was like 19 years old, right? I'm in my late 20s now, but anyways, started this business on Amazon. And I really enjoyed the fact that I can understand numbers and make decisions based off those numbers. Everyone in this world would lie to you, your mom, your dad, your sister, your brother, but numbers, Nick, will never lie to you, you know? And I love that you can make data-driven decisions, you know? And so, you know, after understanding what the USP is, what CTRs are, impressions, and all these wonderful things that we talk about on Amazon, and kind of understanding on how the algorithm works, on how your competitors kind of are on the platform, how other brands that have been selling for 30, 40 years in brick and mortar stores, after you divulge in all of that, you can make data-driven decisions. And you know, it's a whole realm. You know, at first you're a generalist on Amazon, and then you find specialists, right, that are good with Amazon PPC, that are good with product sourcing. And so kind of understanding all that, I really enjoyed the entrepreneurial journey. And I said, you know what, this is it for me. And so I just stopped completely with law in general and said, hey, this is amazing. I want to have fun. I'm making way more than how much a first year graduate would be making my second year in law school. And I said, let's go with it. And I just picked it up.
You didn't know this part of yourself growing up?
I had no idea. I literally had no idea that I was even good with data and numbers. I always thought I sucked at numbers, but that's just because I didn't pay attention in math class. Because I didn't enjoy it.
Your grades were no good for things like math and chemistry and physics or anything like that?
No, my grades were always low in math and chemistry. The only A that I probably got in my entire educational career was that one pre-calculus class in college where I ended up getting an A. But besides that, I never had good grades in math, physics. I only had good grades in probably history and English because I, you know, I actually like it. And we always talk about stuff like that, right? And so yeah, my grades always low in that. But actually,
so did you like the teachers who taught the math and physics classes and chemistry classes?
Probably. I mean, I liked talking to them. I just didn't enjoy the subject. And so, you know, because it's nice on Amazon, Nick, because like you can understand a number, make a change, and in the short term, you see the change that you made using that number. So I like seeing the results, right? And Amazon's very dynamic. If you make a change right now, in the next 2 hours, you'll see a difference that happened, you know? And so...
So wait a minute. I'm hearing something else here. I'm hearing that... It's not necessarily the numbers that you like. It's the fact that the results are pretty quick. You can see the impact you're making fairly quickly.
It's so dynamic, Nick. It's so dynamic.
That's because you use the word dynamic a few times now. So it's not that the numbers are just a vehicle for you to see the results of something you're working on quickly. You think that's the reason why you like this?
100%. I mean, we were talking about Amazon PPC before. You tell me, Nick, if you change a keyword bid from $2, for example, it's at 4 o'clock, it's $2, and at 4:30, you change the bid of that keyword to $4. What do you think would happen?
Well, I mean, obviously, that's a huge.
You'll get yeah.
Yeah, it's a thrill, right?
Your impressions are going to change. Yeah, your impressions are going to change because your impressions are changing. People are seeing the ad more. They're coming onto the ad more. Your click-through rate is changing. Your conversion rate is changing.
And numbers are telling you to do those things.
Exactly. And that is the wonderful part about it.
I'm going to suggest to you that is your attraction. You don't really care about numbers. You care about what numbers are giving you as an experience and the outcome.
100%. I would not disagree with that. The thrill of kind of like understanding that, okay, I read this somewhere. And by the way, you have to be reading all the time to have an Amazon business about what's sure. happening in that industry, what's happening in this industry, what's happening in brick and mortar. You know, I'm always watching NBC to understand what's going on in the markets. And so when you kind of have all these ideas running in your head, you have to be able to test them. And the way that you test them is through the translation of numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. Numbers are the means to the final outcome that gives you the truth.
Yeah. It's very data oriented, as you know. And so yeah,
that's all it is. Amazon, see, everybody thinks that, oh, Jeff Bezos created this online retail business. That's not what he created. He created a business machinery that is process-oriented and data-driven. That's it. You can apply that to anything. All they do is, as soon as they start something new, the first question is, okay, how are we going to measure this? And once they figure out the most complex things, I mean, when I started on Amazon in 2004.
Wow.
So that's 18 years ago now. So those days, the number of metrics. In fact, I went to Amazon. Well, when I say I went to Amazon, we had an account executive. And I said, listen, I see a lot of reports here. And those days, reports were nowhere near what we have today. But they were still quite a few reports, fairly complex reports. I want to know how to make use of these reports. Can I pay? Do you have like a tutorial? Or can you recommend a resource that can teach how to use these reports? You know what they told me? No, there is no such thing. In fact, she said, Even we don't know how to use those reports because we had developers who came up with the idea of the reports and they created the reports, but they're no longer with the company. So nobody knows how the reports work. So that's how it was. So, but at the end of the day, that's what it was. It was always data-driven, process-based operation. Nobody comes in and says, okay, I am ordering everybody to do this. Everybody stop doing it. It doesn't work like that. There's an override. You know what overrides when somebody says something like that? The system does. I see it all the time. I had a client and they didn't need a UPC because it was a custom product. So I had an account executive assigned and I said, can you get a waiver for them for the entire account? It's always going to be custom. It's no problem. He got the waiver in. We were able to submit and then we listed the item and it starts selling, bang, it's delisted. Why? So I go straight to the account executive. Can you see that this thing is offline? And he goes in and he comes back, says, you know, sorry, the system override because there's no UPC. He says, I'm going to have to get an approval from higher ups to get the system settings changed. So, I mean, that's what it is. The systems control everything. And of course, people are looking at the data and they're saying, okay, this is what we need to do. That's what we need to do. And so that's how they decide. So that's the best.
Yeah. And just a caveat off that, I feel like Amazon has been delivering more data recently, as we talked about before. And I think another reason for that, Nick, is that the aggregators, the ones that are, you know, building these, buying these businesses, trying to build these businesses, they have a lot of professionals that are data analysts, very data-oriented people on their teams that are requesting from Amazon that, hey, we need to see this number. We need to see this number. And so because they're kind of asking these questions to Amazon, Amazon doesn't want to just roll it out to the aggregators. They're giving it to all these, you know, all the individual sellers and businesses that, hey, the aggregators asked for it. Let's roll it out.
As long as you are brand registered, you have access.
Yeah, exactly. Which is nice.
Yeah.
So
this is great. Well, I mean, you are like Energizer Bunny. You are always running around trying to get something and then make changes and see the results.
Yeah, testing is the most important thing on Amazon. If you can test, you know, lose fast, fail fast, test again, keep testing, and just funnel down to what works, right? That's Amazon.
Do more of what works and less of what doesn't.
100%.
Yeah. So tell us, how can people reach you? Give us your contact information, which will be on our website and on YouTube, but tell us how people can connect with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn. You can type in my name, S-H-A-F-F, Shaff, and then last name, Qureshi, Q-U-R-E-S-H-I. And then same thing for Instagram, Shaff.Qureshi. You can DM me, message me if you have any questions. I'm free to help anyone out.
Great. Thank you, Shaff. This was great. You delivered a lot of gold.
Absolutely. You got it, Nick.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of another episode. I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.